Long time ago, just a couple months or so after Terry and I were married, we were lying in bed one night reading, and after about 20 minutes or so, she started laughing. And I figured she was reading some fiction or biography and assumed that her outbursts would soon pass. But they didn't. Every 5 seconds, she would break out again laughing and laughing. And this was definitely interfering with my ability to concentrate. And so in a mildly irritating tone, I asked, "What is so funny?" And at this point, she was in tears from being so humored. She said, "This chapter describes you so perfectly." And she showed me the book, a book that was popular back in the late 70s, early 80s, and especially in Christian circles. And she went on to read me a few sentences from it and could barely read them because of her uncontrolled laughing. Rocky Choleric is the hot, quick, active, practical, and strong-willed temperament type, which is self-sufficient and very independent. He is decisive and opinionated, finding it easy to make decisions both for himself and for other people. And to this I replied, "That isn't me at all." And she said, "Yes, it is. You manage every decision I make, telling me that what I want to do is stupid and that I need to listen to you and do it your way." And I, of course, flatly denied this. She went on reading from the same chapter. Rocky Choleric thrives on activity. In fact, to him, life is activity. He has endless ideas, plans, goals, and ambitions. He is always in the middle of a project. Once he has started toward his goal, he most likely will run roughshod over those who stand in his way. He tends to be domineering and bossy and does not hesitate to use people to accomplish his goals. Again, I said, "That's not me. I mean, what she read sounded like a horrible person. And how can you agree with any of this? That doesn't describe me at all." Of course, all she could do was laugh. I didn't think any of it was amusing at all. She went on to read, "Rocky Choleric's emotional nature is the least developed part of his temperament. He does not sympathize easily with others, nor does he naturally show or express compassion." The more she read, the more she laughed, and the more irritated I became. The chapter went on, saying that people with... What'd she say?
"It's still good."
She's still laughing. I'm still irritated. The chapter went on saying that people with this temperament are demanding, hard to please, fussy, sarcastic, irritable, cold, unaffectionate, inconsiderate. And while they may not have ulcers themselves, they give ulcers to others. And the list goes on. I mean, I knew people that this chapter described, and I didn't really care for them. And I was not very agreeable to this suggestion, this argument that I was like them. Now, the book did say some positive things about this temperament, but Terry didn't read any of those paragraphs to me. Well, we were quite young at the time. Both of us were just 25 years old, and we really didn't know each other very well, but that's another story for another sermon. But this was, believe it or not, the first time anyone had ever pointed out to me any of these characteristics and said, "This is you." This was the first time. I was completely clueless. I had no idea that this is how I came across to other people. In fact, the chapter Terry was reading from even talked about that. Those with this temperament are often blind to their weaknesses because others are too afraid to point them out to them. To all this, I simply responded by telling her that the book was stupid, didn't know what it was talking about, and that she should just listen to me instead and not spend so much time reading, which only furthered the point, you know, the case against me. Though I played the tough guy and flatly denied that anything in this chapter she was reading applied to me, it did get my attention. Am I really like this? If so, I need to be careful. As the years went by, there would be certain occasions when people would point out to me some of those undesirable traits, and I'd have to reckon with the fact that these were more or less blind spots. I would say and do things without thinking that would irritate people, and I would be completely clueless about it. One incident that was very revealing and helpful took place maybe 6 or 7 years ago. I can't remember who all was in the car. I think it was Denny and Heather and possibly Jessica, maybe Pam. And it was a Wednesday evening, and we were heading out to a fast food restaurant before an E4 session. And I don't remember who was driving, but I was in the back seat. And for some reason, everyone was ganging up on me in a playful way, commenting on my bossiness and how I try to tell other people what to do, and that I should just let them make their own decisions and treat others like adults. And I was kind of startled by this, and so I pushed back, saying, look, I may have been like that a long time ago, but I'm not nearly as guilty as what you guys are suggesting. At that very moment, we were pulling into the parking lot, and I said from the back seat, impulsively, without thinking, watch out for that other car. You should wait for them and then park in that spot over there. And everyone just busted out laughing. And it took me a couple moments, and then I said, oh. All right. Well, this is a classic example of having a blind spot. I could probably be the poster child for this. And more than that, a classic example of knowing what the blind spot is and yet continuing to be blind when I'm in it. And this little sign here says it all. Now, I'm not as blind as I once was. I'm a little bit more alert, hopefully a little more aware. I do catch myself from time to time. One would hope that a guy my age would eventually get a clue about how he comes across to others. But yet, I know that some things, probably a lot of things I do and say, go right by me. They are so natural, so much a part of who I am, that I just fail to see it. Can a leopard change its spots, as they say? Can Wendell not tell people how to park at Arby's? Can Wendell not be obsessed with projects and not take advantage of others, even abuse others, to see those projects fulfilled, and so on? As recent as a month ago, I was challenged in an elders meeting about making certain decisions on my own that should have been first vetted by the rest of the group. I guess I do that, don't I? Well, we all have blind spots. Don't you love my graphic? Isn't this beautiful? We all have blind spots. We all have blind spots. So enough about me. Let's now turn our attention to out there. Some of our folks have the same ones I have. Others have ones that are much different. If you do not think you have blind spots, then as C.S. Lewis might put it, you are blind indeed. And more to the point, you may very well know what those blind spots are. People have pointed them out to you before, but the weaknesses are so natural that you continue in them nonetheless and fail to recognize it when you do so. And everyone is around you is going, there he goes again, to which you're saying, what did I do? In one of his books, Genesis in Space and Time, Francis Schaeffer addresses some of the effects of the fall. And in this, he notes four separations that have plagued each of us. God had intended unity, harmony in each of these, but because of sin, because of the fall, there is instead disunity and disharmony. One would be man's relationship with God. The second one is man's relationship with each other, with others. The third one is man's relationship with nature. And the fourth one is man's relationship with himself. Man's disunity with himself could easily be a whole sermon. It's quite fascinating. Because of our fallen nature, you and I struggle with all kinds of things that put us out of sorts with ourselves. Guilt, worry, lack of self-control, restlessness, lack of peace, doubts, anxiety. We tell ourselves lies. We manufacture excuses for our behavior, for the things that we do. We get paranoid about things. We lack self-confidence, and yet at the same time, we are overconfident. We second-guess our decisions. We are unhappy with who we are, and so on. And a big one on the list is we each have blind spots. We are out of sorts with ourselves to the point that even if we know what our blind spots are, we still fail in them and don't see it. We still do and say things that are irritating to others and irritating to God and harmful to our reputations. And yet, again, we remain clueless. Every one of us, every one of us. Now, in the resurrection, one of the great blessings we can look forward to, and I'm really looking forward to this, is complete lucidity. I've talked a little bit about this in the past. We will see and understand God, others, ourselves, and everything else as they are meant to be seen and understood. But until then, we will be in a certain degree of darkness. We will be, and we are, impaired. But God in his kindness has not abandoned us in this. He has given us certain gifts that can help us see in this darkness, to see ourselves better. Gifts that only show us our blind spots, but more importantly, show us the path to correction. For instance, he has given us the scriptures. You know the verse, all scripture is God-breathed and useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness. I mean, generally speaking, teaching is telling us what we need to know, how to live. Rebuking is pointing out where we failed. Correcting is showing us how to get back on track. And training has to do with keeping us on track. All for the sake of righteousness, all for the purpose of being more like Christ. He has also given us the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit, of course, works in our lives, convicting us of sin and giving us the grace we need to not only repent, but to also grow in godliness and righteousness. In Psalm 139, David calls upon God to search his heart, search his life, and show him anything that could be offensive. This so that God would lead him in, quote, the everlasting way. Another gift, one that we probably don't appreciate like we should, actually we probably tend to despise it, would be the comments, advice, rebukes, corrections, and admonishments from other people. You and I may be blind to our blind spots, but they are blazingly obvious to everyone else. And so you and I need other people, friends, family, fellow church members, co-workers, teachers, bosses, and yes, even our spouse, to point out those blind spots to us, which is always very enjoyable, right? Always very enjoyable. And this then brings us to the heart of the matter, this willingness to receive correction from others, the main thrust of today's subject. And not surprisingly, what book of the Bible do you think speaks to this? Proverbs 25:12, like an earring of gold or an ornament of fine gold is a wise man's rebuke to a listening ear. 19:20, listen to advice and accept instruction, and in the end, you will be wise. 10:17, he who heeds discipline shows the way of life, but whoever ignores correction leads others astray. A mocker resents correction. He will not consult the wise. Or in another translation, conceited people do not like to be corrected. They never ask for advice from those who are wiser. 19:25, flog a mocker, and the simple will learn prudence. Rebuke a discerning man, and he will gain knowledge. He who listens to a life-giving rebuke will be at home among the wise. He who ignores discipline comes to poverty and shame, but whoever heeds correction is honored. Once more. From chapter 9, whoever corrects a mocker invites insult. Whoever rebukes a wicked man incurs abuse. Do not rebuke a mocker or he will hate you. Rebuke a wise man and he will love you. 27:5, better is open rebuke than hidden love. In the next verse, wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. 15:32, he who ignores discipline despises himself, but whoever heeds correction gains understanding. 12:1, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid. 9:9, instruct a wise man, and he will be wiser still. Teach a righteous man, and he will add to his learning. More? 26:12, do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him. 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. 28:23, he who rebukes a man will in the end gain more favor than he who has a flattering tongue. 29:1, a man who remains stiff-necked after many rebukes will suddenly be destroyed without remedy. 13:10, pride only breeds quarrels, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. 15:10, stern discipline awaits him who leaves the path. He who hates correction will die. And one more for now. A rebuke goes deeper into a man of understanding than 100 blows into a fool. Let me go back to the first one, which is probably my favorite in this whole list, the one I began with. Like an earring of gold or an ornament of fine gold is a wise man's rebuke to a listening ear. To a listening ear. Well, indeed, this is God's gift to us. We need to appreciate it. It really is a true gift. He, out of his love for us, provides various people, believers and even sometimes non-believers, who advise us, correct us, admonish us, instruct us, even rebuke us for our benefit, for our sanctification. And this is especially needed and indeed a true gift when it comes to those areas where our sins and weaknesses and wrongdoings are not as apparent to us as they should be. You know, when you have two or three people telling you that you have a problem in a particular area, how can you dismiss that? When you have four or five or more telling you the same sorts of things about yourself, well, to use the language of the Proverbs, you would be a mocker, a fool, to ignore it. In all of this, it would serve us well to remember really the opening chapters of Proverbs. In fact, the first 9 chapters serve as more or less an introduction to the whole book, exhorting the reader to seek wisdom, to pursue understanding, to gain knowledge, to not be wise in your own eyes, but to accept correction and discipline, to choose wisdom over gold, the fear of the Lord over silver, righteousness over riches, power, or fame. The whole book of Proverbs assumes that the reader is, to some degree, ignorant and uninformed, and that the reader doesn't want to remain so. And this extends to the reader's ignorance about all the things he does and says that irritates others, and all the things he does and says that irritates God. Thus, the charge to seek and pursue wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, including all that junk about our own shortcomings and deficiencies. We need advice. We need correction. We need rebukes, to use the biblical term. And we need, of course, humility in order to accept those corrections and rebukes. It's not easy, not easy at all, but any situation that calls us to confront our sin and flaws and selfishness has enormous value. And what a shame it would be if we were unable to benefit from this gift of God simply because we lacked humility, because we were, as the Proverbs warned about, stiff-necked. A couple months ago, at a Saturday morning men's meeting, Guy Platter was exhorting us on this very subject of accepting correction from each other. And the discussion at that moment was quite interactive, and I remember one of the guys agreeing, but went on to say that he has a hard time accepting correction from those he doesn't have a close relationship with. And Guy acknowledged that, you know, this would be true, but went on to say, all of us should be at the point that if the correction is applicable, we should be able to accept it from anyone. Just good words. Are we teachable? Are we open to that kind of instruction? Again, many of our objectionable character traits that we are blind to are glaringly obvious to everyone else. Are we willing to learn from other people what we look like? People, you know, help round us out. Again, God's gift to us. Family. Friends, co-workers, teachers, bosses, church members, our spouse. As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. As you may remember from your lessons in hermeneutics, the letters in the New Testament are what we call occasional documents. That is, the author was prompted by some occasion. There was some situation that prompted the author to write the letter. And with a number of these, the occasion was to correct either wrong beliefs or wrong behaviors, or sometimes both. The more obvious examples would include 1 Corinthians, pretty obvious, Galatians, and 2 Thessalonians. Though correction is painful and often unwelcomed and undesired on our part, there really can be no sanctification without it. And this is what we signed up for when we told God yes. This is all part of that business of being transformed into the image of His Son. The Corinthians had blind spots. The Galatians had blind spots, as did others who received the letters in the early church. The apostles themselves had blind spots. And of course, the same is true for you and me. When a weakness or failing is pointed out, we can dismiss it or own it. We can ignore it or accept it. We can be resistive or teachable. To use the language of the Proverbs, we can be wise or a fool, one who fears the Lord or a mocker. So let's consider some common areas where receiving instruction is more times than not resisted. Blind spots where people are more than content to just sort of like leave things be. And these deal with more of how one manages the affairs of his or her life rather than character traits. And for the sake of time, I'm just going to mention five, and I won't be spending a lot of time on all these. Maybe a couple will get more time than others. And these are kind of just based on my own observations and the observations of others as seen in comments I've picked up over the years and have found myself agreeing with. One area is the management of money. So as I work through this short list, just kind of consider this for some self-reflection. You know, money management is a very personal thing. People don't want to be told that they are spending money foolishly, that they're not saving like they should, that they are careless with investments and should be tithing and so on. You know, it's none of your business kind of thing. Leave me alone about it. And as to be expected, most, if not all, who resist advice and counsel from those who are wiser and more experienced will later regret it, deeply regret it. Another area is marriage, how a person treats his or her spouse. People don't want to hear it. And we all see these flaws in other people, but we often don't see them in our own marriage relationship. And because this area is so personal, we are too afraid to say anything. And we don't want to take the risk that they will take the opportunity to challenge us in our own marriage. And so nobody ever says anything. A third area where correction is difficult to receive is in matters of integrity. Any suggestion that one has been dishonest or misleading, has lied, or has failed to keep his word, or didn't keep a promise, things like this, well, people come up for air and can be quite testy on that. And even when they know they are guilty, they become resentful if you don't accept their excuse, their flimsy excuse, quite frankly. And this is actually reflected in Proverbs 26, 18 through 19. Like a maniac shooting flaming arrows of death is one who deceives his neighbor and says, "I was only joking." It should say arrows, not areas. Josh, you're supposed to proofread that for me today.
I'm not sure what you're trying to say there.
This is obviously a blind spot in your life. Maybe it's my blind spot. Right. But I want you to picture this like a maniac. I think one version says madman shooting flaming arrows of death. He's just crazy. He's just recklessly shooting these things at everything. And then he deceives his neighbor and then he tries to cover himself up. Oh, I was only joking. I mean, he got caught. His integrity has been called into question. So he recklessly offers this lame excuse. How silly of you to take me so seriously. I was just horsing around. Chill out. Well, he wasn't joking. He just uses this to gloss over his deceit. Ever see anyone do this? Ever do it yourself? But the warning here applies to far more than just claiming to be joking around. It applies to any time we are trying to excuse or dismiss or minimize our dishonesty. When others challenge or question us about our integrity, we need to be forthcoming about it. Using a lie to cover a lie will only lead into more troubles. Another area where correction is difficult to receive has to do with strained or broken relationships that we might be involved in. You know, people challenge us to forgive, to get over it, to not hold a grudge, to meet with the person, get things resolved, to show charity and mercy, you know, all that stuff. And such advice and counsels are seldom received with gratitude and grace. You know, we get answers like, it's more complicated than what you can appreciate, or I can work this out on my own, or the best thing we can all do is pray, which is just another way of saying, I don't plan to do anything about it, and that is that. And number five, the biggest area by far, the one that takes the number one spot of don't challenge me on this, has to be, you can fill in the blank, has to be what?
Parenting.
Parenting. Quite frankly, many parents, not all, but many, are plagued with numerous blind spots on their child-rearing practices and can become very, very sensitive, very touchy if any suggestion is given about that. For some reason, advice and correction is most unwelcomed when it comes to this area. Now, we could say a lot about this. Maybe we need a whole sermon on it at some point. But on this one, what especially stands out is that because of the parent's resistance to advice, others will suffer unnecessarily. Namely, who? Their children. And there is, of course, a proverb for that. Whoever ignores correction... there is a proverb, but I just don't have it on a slide. Proverbs 10:17, whoever ignores correction leads others astray. Let me read it for you again. Whoever ignores correction leads others astray. Not only themselves, but even others. Well, this is probably the most important task the Lord has entrusted to parents, and yet many can be so unteachable in this area, unfortunately. Some parents are harsh with their kids. They don't have a clue at the damage that they are doing. They don't see it. They don't believe that they're harsh. They just don't see it. But everybody else around it sees it. Others on the other side of the spectrum show little or no discipline. Their children misbehave and spoiled rotten. And parents don't see it. They think their kids are cute. They don't have any idea how they're coming across, that they're little monsters, you know, and you're fearing what are they going to look like when they become older. Again, everyone sees it, but the parents. Other parents are inconsistent with their discipline. Some make empty threats. Some favor some of their children over other children. Some discipline only when pushed over the edge, and then they react with anger. And sometimes mom and dad argue in front of the children on matters of child rearing and discipline. And the list goes on and on. Many parents actually say that they want help. And they actually believe that they do, but it is often really not the case, as seen by either their bristling to the advice that is gently offered or their disinclination to apply any advice given to them. Again, this responsibility is one of the greatest ones we have before God. We can't afford to screw it up. We will make mistakes. Everyone does, but we cannot fail in it. And we certainly will if we resist counsel and advice and correction from others who are wiser, more experienced, or more knowledgeable than we are in this area. Don't let your children suffer because of your pride, because you are unteachable. Conceited people, Proverbs 15:12, conceited people do not like to be corrected. They never ask for advice from those who are wiser. All right, so back to the subject of how God uses people in our lives. It would probably be more agreeable to us, quite frankly, if the Lord simply, regarding these blind spots we have and corrections we need, if the Lord just simply appeared to us in person and gave us, or if he didn't appear to us in person, send an angel or give us a vision or a dream, something like that, and then kindly encourage us to do this or that. I mean, that would really have quite an effect, wouldn't that? Paul had a blind spot. He was killing Christians, not realizing that they were God's people. And all that changed on the Damascus Road. Blinding light and a voice from heaven. You know, why can't you and I get that kind of thing? I would notice that. You know, that would speak to me. That would speak to me. You know, okay, I'll stop being demanding and bossy and considerate and all that stuff. Well, for whatever reason, God has chosen to, for the most part, use other people, normal people, people we know, people like our spouse. In fact, our spouse seems to be the Lord's favorite way in showing us our blind spots and the needed correction. Marriage, as someone has wisely observed, was designed by God not just to make us happy, but also to make us holy, to make us more like the Lord himself. And so our husband or wife becomes a tool in the hands of God to shape and mold our character. Weaknesses, character flaws within us all come to light in a marriage relationship. There are no secrets. There are things spouses don't talk about, but there are no secrets. Any blind spot you have will definitely be obvious to them. And they will see it in all of its horrid ugliness and all of its despicable wretchedness. And so this is no doubt part of God's design, his gift. Unfortunately, we aren't really all that open to correction from our spouse. And that's because we know their weaknesses. And who are they to tell us ours? And that's how arguments get going. And again, I would refer to you to Guy Platter's counsel on this. If the rebuke, correction applies, then we should be willing to receive it from anyone. And I might add to that, from the three types of people we would be less inclined to receive it from: a stranger, an enemy, and our spouse. Along with spouses, another resource that God uses to speak into our lives would be the church, fellow brothers and sisters in one's local body. You know, we are challenged formally through sermons and other exhortations in the worship service, and hopefully these are times, you know, when we come face to face with corrections we need to make in our lives. And we are challenged informally as we interact with other believers. This mutual edification and mutual accountability and mutual correcting should be a natural consequence of our relationships with each other. Iron sharpening iron. And you know the verse from Hebrews 10. We refer to it often around here. Let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. The word spur is exactly that: to punch someone in the side with something sharp in order to make them giddy up. In a sense, we are to kick each other in the seat of the pants, poke and push and press, and if necessary, inflict a little pain, doing what we can to compel each other toward godliness, toward love and good deeds. Get off your lazy butt. Get to it. Jesus is coming anytime. There's work to do. Sin in our lives and need to be mastered. Wrong-headed ideas that need to be taken captive and subjected to the truth of Jesus Christ. Blind spots that need to be exposed, challenged, and corrected. Let's quit fooling around. You know, we all share a common goal: conformity into the image of Jesus Christ. We need help with that. We need each other in that. We need encouragement. We need teaching. We need counsel. We need admonishment. We need rebukes. We need correction. We need accountability. And the church is where we get that. It was never meant to be me and Jesus. It was always we and Jesus. Sunday morning, for instance, is an opportunity for us to get pushy with each other, and it is an opportunity to be pushed. The Proverbs warn us about a number of character traits that are undesirable to God, undesirable to others. And any of those could easily be blind spots in any of our lives, traits that need to be pointed out and corrected. And I'm going to read through the list. I did this a few months ago when we first started this series, or a while back at some point. And as I go through this list, I'm just ask you to see if any of them sound familiar. Have others challenged you accordingly? Has your spouse ever said anything to you about any of these? Family members, friends? Have you ever heard comments from coworkers or a boss, your parents, teachers, church members? So as I go through the list, just do some self-reflection here. We have the quick-tempered, the gossip, the greedy, the flatterer, the proud, the lazy, the glutton, the foolish, the nagging wife, the rebellious child, the unreliable, the angry, the stingy, the dishonest, the quarrelsome, the schemer, the gullible, the promise breaker, the perverse, the haughty, the mocker, the untrustworthy, the adulterer, the adulteress, the stiff-necked, the ignorant, the ruthless, the deceiver, the impulsive, the unfaithful, the devious, the drunkard, the rash, the sexually immoral, the sluggard, the scoundrel, the madman, the bloodthirsty, the moocher, lovers of pleasure, those who take advantage of the poor, those who are slack in their work, those who try to get rich quick, those who spread slander, who lack discretion, who talk too much, who chase after fantasies, who lack judgment, who scorn instruction, who delight in airing their own opinions, who dishonor their parents, who reject knowledge, those who withhold good from others, who plot harm, who stir dissension, who love to quarrel, who wield power over others. You know, don't be so quick to dismiss comments made to you through the years. They reveal blind spots in your life, and you do have them. It is God's gift that these are being revealed to you. And if you don't think that you have any, then that is your first blind spot, and no doubt the first of many. So in closing, let me read some of those Proverbs I read earlier that exhort us to receive instruction. I had a list of 20. I'm just going to pick 7 out of that. And with God's help, let us not become a fool or a mocker. Let us not. We have from Proverbs 25:12, of course, like an earring of gold or an ornament of fine gold is a wise man's rebuke to a listening ear. 19:20, listen to advice and accept instruction, and in the end you will be wise. 27:5, better is open rebuke than hidden love. 27:6, wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. I think we all know what's being referred to there is wounds from a friend. 15:32, he who ignores discipline despises himself, but whoever heeds correction gains understanding. 28:23, he who rebukes a man will in the end gain more favor than he who has a flattering tongue. 17:10, a rebuke goes deeper into a man of understanding than 100 blows into a fool. So finally, if you know what you need to work on and are resolved to change and have those who will speak into your life about that, you know, we have to appreciate this is going to take some time. Correction from others will need to be an ongoing thing, and that will be difficult. And they will need to challenge you over and over, time and time again. And you will need to receive it over and over, time and time again. And you can do it. I can do it. All of us can do it, of course, with God's help. Dave, would you want to close? All right.
I don't know about you. The main thing I got out of that was he grouped spouse in with enemy and stranger. Did you notice that? That's not really the only thing I got out of that. One thing Tom and I have talked about quite a bit lately is so a lot of us in here are not Calvinists, but we still want to hold on to the idea and agree in the sense that there's this idea of total depravity and that we're all fallen. And then, you know, something as simple as, you know, you are harsh with your children or you are too permissive with your children, we don't want to hear that. So something that is academic knowledge that we say we believe doesn't do you any good unless you internalize it, right? And be like, oh, so I'm fallen and depraved. Maybe I do things wrong occasionally after all, and not, it's like, of course you do. We all do that. And it's silly to think otherwise. So if you'd stand with me, I'll dismiss you with a reading from Proverbs chapter 1 that is perhaps just a little more general than what Wendell was reading to us, but just about the general call of wisdom. Wisdom cries aloud in the streets, in the markets. She raises her voice at the head of the noisy streets. She cries out at the entrance of the city gates. She speaks. How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? If you turn at my reproof, behold, I will pour out my spirit to you, and I will make my words known to you. You are dismissed. Enjoy your time with each other this morning as Wendell has encouraged us to.